What do you do to relax? What do you do to switch off?
I like to paint. I make things. I like to.
What do you make?
I have a thing where I make models of. When I was Mayor of London, we build a beautiful. I make buses.
Hello, welcome to another Brewing Podcast. We're focusing on the uncertain future of British politics with Amit Gill, David Cameron's former Director of Strategy and partner at Hanbury Strategy, discussing the Tory leadership election, implications for Brexit, and potential for another general election. This analysis will follow the end of Boris's answer and a few important messages.
We'll have a dividing thing.
Yeah.
And I turn it into a bus, and I put passengers. You really want to know this?
You're making cardboard buses. That's what you do to enjoy yourself.
I paint the passengers.
Do bear with us, nearly there.
Enjoying themselves.
Okay, great.
On the wonderful bus.
Great.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Brewin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Okay, hello everybody, welcome to another Brewin Podcast. This week we are joined by Amit Gill. He is a partner in Hanbury Strategy, perhaps not a household name, but Hanbury Strategy advises investors and businesses on UK and international politics, and the firm also advises political campaigns. And Amit was previously a speechwriter and a director of communications and strategy for David Cameron. So, Amit, thank you very much for joining us. I wonder if we could start. We'll obviously spend most of this talking about the various repercussions, I guess, of the referendum that took place in 2016. But I know when we were talking earlier, you were able to kind of set the scene quite nicely for exactly why that referendum took place. It's very popularly known as a sort of defensive measure against UKIP. But that perhaps doesn't tell the full story of the background to the referendum.
Yeah, I mean, look, so the judgment call David Cameron made when he offered the referendum was this, is that, you know, an in-out referendum on the UK's relationship with the European Union was inevitable in our national life in the next decade or so. So if you wanted the UK to stay in the EU, it was better to go sooner rather than later, so you don't let the issue keep on festering, and to have a Tory Prime Minister campaigning for in, because you need to get as much of that Tory vote to join you. I mean, look, I think that judgment call was correct. We are now going through a Tory leadership election right now. And are you seriously telling me that if David Cameron hadn't have called that referendum, and even if he had won in 2015 and he stood down, that all these leadership candidates would not all be offering this referendum now? Of course they would be, because the grassroots were demanding it, the parliamentary party were demanding it. And I would also hazard a guess at this, is that all of those candidates who would have been saying, yeah, I'm going to offer this referendum, would probably be saying, I'm also going to go for Brexit, right? So this referendum within the Tory party is always going to happen. And then the argument's made, well, it never would have happened with the Labour. But people forget in 2015, the first policy decision Labour made after the 2015 election was to overturn their opposition to having an EU referendum. They all voted for the EU referendum bill. It became established Labour Party policy because they realised that this issue they were getting killed on as well, on the doorstep. So the judgment call, as I say, Cameron made was that this was inevitable. If you want the UK to stay in, go sooner rather than later and have a Tory Prime Minister campaigning for in.
Okay, so the only flaw then was the fact that he didn't win.
Yeah.
Okay, and so... With that, then there's a reasonable amount of water under the bridge that kind of gets us to the position that we're in right now. So kind of fast forwarding, we've got this we've got this leadership contest going on at the moment, and perhaps the easiest question of the day Is there anything that can stop Boris Johnson from winning this contest?
Well, look, never say never in politics, especially after the events of the past few years. But it will take a pretty big event, I think, to prevent Boris Johnson from winning. He's definitely the firm favourite among the grassroots. And when I say a pretty big event, I mean like it has to be a serious event, which means he has to withdraw from the race. I think as long as it goes to a ballot, he's pretty Teflon with the grassroots, at least at the moment.
So bigger than revelations about painting wooden buses. And
yeah,
things
bigger
like that.
Than that, yeah, exactly. So I think it would take a serious catastrophe, really, for Boris Johnson to lose this. And so he does look on course to win it. And the other thing just to note is that the ballots actually start landing on people's doormats from this weekend.
Yeah.
A lot of them will probably vote quite almost straight away. That puts him in quite a good position. He just needs to keep it together, really, for the next week or two. You know, they would have already sent their postal votes in by the end of next week, and then, you know, he's in a good position.
And are you surprised by the campaigning line that he's been taking since getting to the hustings stage? I think I might have expected his rhetoric to harden, and it sort of feels like it's softened a bit on Brexit.
Well, that's interesting. Do you think, I don't know if it has softened. I actually think it's hardened a bit. Look, the most important thing that has been said in this whole of this Leech campaign, from the moment it was triggered to now, is Boris Johnson saying, deal or no deal, come what may, I'm going to leave on October the 31st. And true, he said that before we got into the grassroots stage. But actually, now we're in the grassroots stage, you know, he has actually firmed that commitment up quite a lot. You know, the do or die, you know, that's pretty strong language, which could come back to haunt him if he doesn't actually deliver on it.
But he's been saying that he thinks it's very, very, very unlikely that it would be a no-deal Brexit, which seems to, well, he seems this, to weaken his own hands.
Yeah, somewhat. I know. That was the million-to-one thing he said was a bit strange. I totally agree with that. But I was on the other side, as I say, you know, he has been do-or-die, we would leave. He has now gone to the Dominic Raab position of not ruling out proroguing Parliament. You know, in the MP stage, he was quite, basically, it was Don Raab's position and people didn't think Boris Johnson would be in it. And now he's kind of rode back on that a bit. So I actually think he has firmed up his rhetoric. The million to one thing, I agree, was a bit of a weird one. But really, in reality, what is coming through is a harder line of position. You know, the other thing is that you will see this week, and they're doing it at the moment, you know, Jeremy Hunt's obviously going on Brexit and his Brexit no deal plan today. You know, Boris Johnson, will that dividing line he has on October the 31st, he will hammer that and hammer that and hammer that. It's just basically, will you commit deal or no deal on October the 31st? Hunt's not doing that. Boris is. He knows that plays well, and he'll keep on doing that.
And his commitment doesn't. He refused to say that he'd resign if he didn't leave on October the 31st. Didn't he? That does that not seem a bit of a softening?
Yeah. Look, I think that any prime minister who starts saying I'm going to resign over X, Y, Z, you basically are already signing your kind of political death warrant. You know, you've got to wait till you get into number 10 before you start like saying when you're going to have to step down.
Okay. So. Assuming he wins, then, and it sounds like we are assuming that he wins, given that he's not rowing back on this deadline that he's set himself, the sort of popular conception of this is that there's no way that he's going to be able to negotiate a new deal in that time. Is that your perspective?
Look, I think that what the European Union want, more than anything, is for a British Prime Minister, it's one of the reasons they fell out of faith with Theresa May, to demonstrate they can command the competence of the House on a plan, right, on Europe. If Boris Johnson can do that early on in his premiership by testing the House on, let's say, a five-year time limit, and then taking that to the European Union and saying, look, the House has said it can accept a five-year time limit to the backstop, can we start negotiating that? Then maybe he has a chance. There are two problems with that, though. The first is, I'm not sure whether a five-year time limit would command the confidence of the House of Commons, right? Which is actually the outer, real. If you
explain how a five-year time limit would work, then.
Just basically, if the backstop is still in the withdrawal agreement, if we fall into the backstop after 5 years, it's over. And we're allowed to leave. The UK was allowed to leave. So this idea that the backstop keeps us wedded to the EU in perpetuity, and the UK can never leave it without the EU's consent, It's just basically putting a cap on that and a time limit.
Okay, now, and then you could go to a no-deal relationship exactly, yeah. after 5 years.
Exactly. Like now, I think that the issue is that that is at the outer end of what the EU will even accept or negotiate. The question is, will that even pass the House of Commons? And this is what Boris Johnson needs to be asking himself, because I think one of the issues that he faces is that he does have a hardcore set of levers within his parliamentary party, the hardest parts of the ERG, and I'm not sure that enough of them would vote for that over preference for no deal. As I said earlier, the most important thing that Boris Johnson has ever said in this election campaign is October the 31st, we leave deal or no deal. So at some stage, if he comes back with a deal, which is like a 5-year time limit, and says to his party, okay, here you go, I've got the deal, his ERG will go, actually, we'll just take the no deal instead.
Yeah.
Now, there could be enough Labour MPs to come to his rescue and get this deal through. So he could manage to lose like 20 to 30 of his own MPs while getting some Labour MPs to back him.
And you think the DUP would be on board?
I think the DUP could be on board for that, yeah. I think they've given indications, they could a time limit they could work with. Then, as I say, it all comes down to parliamentary arithmetic. Do enough Labour MPs back Boris Johnson? Maybe, and you can't rule it out, because a lot of them now, especially those in Leave seats, want to deliver Brexit. But you're asking, really, in reality, there, Labour MPs to save Boris Johnson's political skin? That's a big judgment call for them to make, especially when people think there could be an election coming up, a vote of confidence, you could lose it. If you're a Labour MP in a Leave seat, do you actually vote Boris Johnson's deal through in those scenarios? Maybe, but you've got to be pretty brave.
And so how many MPs... So the MPs that he's going to lose from his own block then is Dominic Greaves and that kind of...
Well, he'll lose some of the ERG. And then the hardcore ERG. And the numbers to look at, really, is that if you think... Remember back to Meaningful Vote 3, which I think was on March 29th, right? The day we were supposed to leave. I think there were 27 Tory MPs, so you do need to check that, who still voted against Theresa May's deal that day. That is a pretty hardcore bunch of 27. It's going to take a lot to shift the dial with them.
Most of whom were leavers.
Yeah.
But a couple of remainers. Okay, so then in which case you're looking for roughly the same number to come on from...
Because he's basically got no majority. Okay.
Okay. But then, and then that's all, that didn't get any of the Labour... The Kate Hoys and people like that.
I can't remember the exact numbers, but three Labour MPs ended up backing Theresa May's deal so far.
Okay, so what do you think? Can that happen?
Never say never in politics, and the dynamic of having a new Prime Minister could change things. I think it's difficult.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, for him to get a deal through Parliament, he needs to negotiate something with the European Union. Tough. And whatever he needs to negotiate with the European Union, he then needs to get through the House of Commons. Really tough.
Okay. And he would start by demonstrating that there's an appetite within the House.
Well, look, if I was advising him, that's what I'd try and do to begin with. Just to demonstrate, if you're entering in these... Look, the first question Macron's going to ask, the first question Merkel's going to ask when he picks up the phone to them the first day in Downing Street in July 24 and says, I want XYZ in this renegotiation, is like, will you get it through the House of Commons? That's what they'll ask. Because if you can't show us that, then why are we even bothering, right? Because... To be honest, they all want to go on their summer holidays. They want to spend it, doing diplomacy, with Boris Johnson. So he's got to demonstrate to them, in my opinion, that he can get something through the House of Commons.
Okay. And a lot of that will have to do with the other options that are available to the people he's trying to persuade. So, particularly on the Remain side or on the anti-no deal side, there's been lots of discussion about whether Parliament will prevent a no-deal Brexit in the way that it seemed to manage to rule it out in the earlier in the year. Yeah. So can you clarify for us, is Parliament still able to prevent a no-deal Brexit?
The short answer is yes, but obviously there's a much longer one. There are two ways that they can do it, and there are two ways that Parliament will look to do it. And I think when you look into the autumn and you look at that Boris Johnson becoming Prime Minister, him trying this negotiation with Europe, either failing with it or succeeding with Europe, but failing in the House of Commons, or there will come a moment probably in September, October, when Boris Johnson has to declare that we are going to leave without a deal on October 31st. Now, if that happens, I think Parliament would look to act in one of two ways. The first way would be kind of using arcane parliamentary procedure to do what they did in earlier on this year. Basically, take control of the order paper, take control of the legislative agenda, and pass a law mandating the Prime Minister to request an extension of Article 50. And there are a couple of ways they can do it, by amending the standing orders, but fundamentally with a Speaker who is willing to, let's put it politely, bend the rules in their favour, I think they will find the ways to do that.
We seem to have one of those, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. And I think they'll have the parliamentary numbers to do that as well. Because
really? Right.
Well, I think that Cooper Letwin Bowles the first time passed by one vote. So it was very tight, I give you that. And obviously Oliver Letwin tried this thing a couple of weeks ago with the opposition day debate, which failed by 12 votes. But what I would say is this. When we get to October and we have a Prime Minister and a government whose active policy is no deal, but also, quite importantly, we have a lot of what I would call current Remain payroll, who will then be on the back benches. I'm talking about Philip Hammond, Greg Clark, David Gawke, probably won't have a role in a future Boris Johnson government, but will be on the back benches. They probably will have the parliamentary numbers to pass this legislation to mandate an extension of Article 50. So that's method one. Method two is a motion of no confidence, i.e. just going straight to it and going, right, we're going to bring down the government. You know, Boris has a majority of like two or three. You don't need many Tories to flip. Now, I still think this is the least likely solution, because I think that it is such a big step for Tory MPs to bring down a Tory government, especially when there's, in their view, a Marxist across the aisle. I mean, the world would be such a different place, by the way, if there was a Tony Blair or even a Gordon Brown leading the Labour Party right now, you know, but the fact that Jeremy Corbyn is actually one of the key reasons we're in this situation. So the motion of confidence route, I think, is less likely
and just
to work, but it's an option.
Just to clarify, so a motion of no confidence since the Fixed Term Parliaments Act was enacted doesn't take you straight to a general election.
No, you have a 14... So first of all, the motion of no confidence is still how old motion of no confidence has worked. You only need to win by 50% plus one. So the Fixed Term Parliament Act, people always get it quite confused because there's another rule in there, which is two-thirds of Parliament have to vote to have an election. But that's different. A motion of no confidence, you just need to defeat the government. And then you enter a 14-day period where anyone... well, if someone can demonstrate they got the confidence of the House, they can become Prime Minister.
What, anyone?
Well, in likelihood, you look to the Jeremy Corbyn, right?
Okay.
You could come in... if you follow it through to its logical conclusion, Boris Johnson could lose it, and the day after, Jacob Rees-Mogg could win it, as of leader of the Conservative Party, whatever, but that's unlikely to happen, right? They'd look to Jeremy Corbyn to see if he could do it. He's not unlikely, would be unlikely to do it. And then after that 14-day period, then they go into the campaign, the election campaign. You look, if this is to happen, a general election, if it's worth just thinking about that now, I should say, if you go to a motion of no confidence and the government falls, you obviously will lead to an election naturally. My view is also, if Parliament acts to block no deal through the kind of arcane parliamentary procedure to force Boris Johnson to extend Article 50, we're on for an election. Because I don't think Boris Johnson, he'll basically just then realise his hands have been tied by Parliament, they're stopping the will of the people in his view. I think he will inevitably have to call an election. I say inevitably, that's quite a strong word, but in those circumstances, he will probably call an election.
Okay. And so, well, so if that were to happen, if he were to want to have an election, does that require that's by that stage, it's going to be too late to have an election before October the 31st.
Yeah.
So does he defer it? Does Parliament defer it?
Well, look, remember, at this stage, if you think of this former example, you have where you use arcane parliamentary procedure, he would have been mandated to extend Article 50. So right. I think that let's say they do this in mid-October before the October Council, that's when the Parliament will need to act. One option available to Prime Minister Johnson, as it would be then, would be to say, okay, I will go to Europe and I will say, I've been told by Parliament to request an extension for X long. Well, I'm doing it, but I'm doing it to have an election. And Europe, you've always said, if there's a major electoral event coming up in the UK, you would extend Article 50. So Europe will probably say yes, and extend Article 50 and have that election. And it'll just run that whole campaign going, I only had to do this because those kits in Parliament didn't let me, you know, fulfil your mandate, so give me the mandate now and I can do it.
Yeah.
The motion no confidence then gets very tricky, right? Because if Parliament decide to bring down the government in early October, you're right, they were, all that 14-day period, campaign period, we end up reaching over the October the 31st. So Parliament, this is why I think it's a less likely route, if Parliament was to do the motion no confidence, they would then have to combine that with also mandating a Prime Minister to extend Article 50 for X many weeks, whatever, to have a general election. And it gets very, very complicated.
Yeah, and you could be in a situation in which they couldn't agree to do that, presumably.
Well, I think they'd look to get Boris Johnson to do it again if he was still Prime Minister, but it gets very complicated. It's a much more messy procedure.
So there's no real scope for... It seems unlikely that he would have a general election ahead of October the 31st.
You know, for him personally just to decide to go for it.
Yeah.
Well, he's got to decide to do it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like, I think that if you think about it, by early September, I think if you do it, I think the IFG did a report which said if you could do it by September the 5th, you could have an election by October the 12th, 24th, I think. But why would you, to be honest, if he's going to no deal on October the 31st, right? He should not be spending 6 weeks of that time having a general election campaign. He needs to be in Downing Street, frankly, making sure the country's ready for no deal on October 31st. So I think that, I don't think that he will personally just decide, right, I'm going to snap an election and go for it. But famous last words, you know, people thought Theresa May would never do that, and look what she did.
Sure. Okay. And so then, if there were to be a general election...
Who's going to win?
Who would win? Would anyone
if
win?
If I knew that, I'd have a lot... I think anyone who tells you they know what the result of the next general election will be if it happens in autumn is lying, because it's a very complicated picture. For a start, we are now in a multi-party system, including a brand new party.
Okay, so straight away, a lot of people will say it feels like a multi-party system, but this, you know, you just can't have a multi-party system event in the UK. Things have to end up. You know, two parties have to rise to the top. So,
Well, look, the reason I think that, but it's an important thing to say at the start, is because you've got to add on to the fact that it currently feels like in a multi-party system, and I agree to you that could be very soft. But we also need the two major parties, the Tories and Labour Party, to adopt the policy positions, which is almost inevitable they will adopt, but haven't done so already. So, the Tory Party at some point have to come out as being the No Deal Party. Right, which is likely they will do that in the autumn, and Boris Johnson will do that. And then we'll know how much of that Brexit Party vote will go straight back to them or not. Also, at the same time, where Labour are on this kind of painful and torturous journey, at the time of the next election, they will be the second referendum party, right? They're kind of getting there, but they will be, right, okay, I'm going to... You know, Jeremy Corbyn's policy at the next election, if it happens in the autumn, will be, I will negotiate a Labour Brexit, customs union, Norway, whatever, and I would put that to the country versus Remain, right?
Yeah.
That's got to be articulated properly though, at some stage, and then we'll know what will happen to the Lib Dem vote. But until the two parties adopt what is, they're coming, inevitably, their policy positions, it's very hard to know exactly how that election will go. There is, though, one thing that I would say. I think the Tory party going into an election when they still haven't delivered Brexit, it is a tricky wicket for them, right? Because fundamentally, though Boris Johnson can run against Parliament and say, look, they're stopping the will of the people, and though he can run against Jeremy Corbyn saying, yeah, he's going to tax you, but also he's kind of overturned your vote, Northern Labour heartlands, he will still be saying to the country, yeah, and we as a Tory party still haven't delivered this damn thing, right? And this is our third time of asking. We asked you in 2016, we asked you in 2017, I'm now asking again. That's a tricky wicket.
Yeah, but... It's also the Labour Party is going to be campaigning on the basis of something their leader fundamentally doesn't believe in, right? You know,
well, he's going to be saying he'll do a Labour Brexit. So look, I think the inevitable, if he does articulate that position, which I believe he will end up doing, what he's trying to do is keep his voting coalition together, right?
Yeah.
Which is, he is trying to say to the Northern Labour heartlands, which voted Leave, I am going to deliver Brexit, right? I'm going to try and negotiate a new Labour deal in Europe, while at the same time saying to the more Remain South, you're going to get your second referendum. I also think, by the way, what Jeremy Corbyn will do is do a Harold Wilson and say, in that referendum, I ain't going to campaign. I'll probably kind of indicate at one stage, bang, I believe you should vote for Labour, Brexit, whatever. But I'm not going to be campaigning.
Right.
Which, actually, just to take this, if Jeremy Corbyn does get into Downing Street and does live this policy, it's almost, never say never in politics, never say anything's inevitable, but it is very likely that Remain wins that referendum, right? Because I'm not, who's going to be campaigning for Norway? Like, who's going to lead that campaign? Especially when the Prime Minister himself isn't doing it. Like, I think you find a lot of Leavers staying at home, you know, because they'll think it's a stitch-up, and I think the Remain vote will just come out to try and stop the thing.
Right.
So, you know, if that does happen, I think it's more likely than not that we end up remaining in the European Union. But that's a big step because Jeremy Corbyn's got to win the election.
Because it's such a soft Brexit that he's campaigning for anyway.
Yeah, well, he won't be campaigning, right?
Okay.
There's a genuine question, who will run that campaign? Who would run the Norway campaign?
Okay. So, and then this issue of the Brexit Party. How many constituencies are at risk or are available to the Brexit Party? Because obviously that part of the electorate has traditionally managed to command quite a lot of votes, but translate them into,
if the Brexit Party,
is it different now from how it had been with UKIP and their failures?
Yeah, but UKIP were 13%, right?
Yeah.
Or 14, I can't remember, in 2015. The Brexit Party are now polling regularly above 20%. And that is a big change. That is a big shift. And that is the kind of percentages which mean they will go from winning one seat, well, UKIP, remember, we're not comparing apples with pears here because it's like UKIP and our Brexit Party, but anyway, from going from one seat to potentially about 50, if not, you know, so, and I think that was one of the, I don't know if it's John Curtis, or a pollster did kind of do like calculations of what this would mean in terms of seats. By the way, if we enter this election, if the election result does come out as like all these four parties roughly on about 20 to 25%, I mean, it's just such a chaos result in terms of the parliamentary arithmetic.
Yeah.
That's why what we need to see, as I say, is the Tory party and the Labour party adopt what is fast becoming their natural policy positions on this issue and then seeing what happens. Look, there's also another, what I would say is that the choices on Brexit are becoming very stark for the country. If you're pessimistic about the chances of a negotiated deal now actually getting through the House of Commons, which I am.
Yes.
You're left with two options, which is no deal or no Brexit.
Yes.
But you can't do either of those things really without public consent in some way, you know? So you have to have an electoral event to get through it. Like, the big question is, and I don't think Boris Johnson would do this, right? But you're going to be in that situation in the autumn. It's like, we either just do no deal or we just don't have Brexit at all. There needs to be an electoral event, and Boris just make the calculation, this is very risky, a general election for me, because the parliamentary arithmetic is going to be really difficult. Plus, I risk Jeremy Corbyn coming into Downing Street and the end of my premiership within like 2 or 3 months. Why don't I just call a referendum and have a second referendum on no deal versus Remain? And he's got a better chance of winning the referendum on no deal versus Remain than he has currently winning an election.
And I guess the argument against that is if you don't change the parliamentary maths, then you can't necessarily... enforce the result of the referendum.
Oh, no, I think that if we have a... That's a very good point, but the main arguments against it are this. Firstly, and most importantly, Boris Johnson was saying, my Leave MPs will go crazy. But the point I'm making is that if you're going for no deal, if you want no deal and are going for no deal, I think at some point you have to realise you probably, and much more likely than not, need some form of public consent for it because the parliamentary arithmetic. And there's only two options. You either have a general election or a referendum.
Yeah.
And with the former, you risk Jeremy Corbyn, right? With the latter, you don't straight away. So that's the calculation. Like you could get Leave MPs starting to realise, actually, this is our way actually to get no deal. The other issue is that will Parliament allow no deal on the ballot paper, right? With current parliamentary arithmetic, there are a lot of MPs who would say, well, no way can we ever have no deal on the ballot paper. It's too irresponsible and risky. But then if you go to some of these Remain MPs and go, you're literally being offered a referendum now. This is what you want. Stop doing your kind of stitch-up referendum of Norway versus Remain. This is the referendum. Maybe they'll take it. Maybe this will be for them. This is our opportunity now to stop this thing. So I do think that you, as I say, no deal versus no Brexit are kind of the two options facing the country. And as we look down the barrel of a general election, what could be coming up on the outside is people going, actually, is a referendum the way out of this?
An outside chance of a referendum. Okay. But general election's most likely though, right?
Yeah.
General election by the end of the year?
It looks. Everyone always asks these probabilities and odds. I'm not going to give odds on it, but I think it's looking like, you know, as it currently sits, it's very difficult to see how Boris Johnson and the Conservative Party square his commitments, i.e. deal and no deal of October 31st, with the parliamentary arithmetic. Something's got to give.
I would agree. Okay. All right. Well, Amit, thank you so much for spending time to explain that to us. Really thought-provoking stuff. And thanks to all our listeners for tuning into another edition of the Bruin Podcast. We hope you'll join us again for another edition shortly.
I make buses.